idea of like having as few barriers between the person and the product as possible is very important to business, which is part of the reason we're on iTunes.
Yes, it is. That's why like Android, like I like using my Android phone. I don't know what iPhones are like, because I can just go, log in with my Google account. Just log in with my Google account.
Yeah.
And I'm just like.
And you can talk about the Orwellian, unfortunate sort of the centralism of that that's a bit uncomfortable.
Sure.
But at the same time, convenience is convenience. And, oh, God, that just started a really scary conversation. The fact that we sell our whole identities to corporations because it's easier than not doing it.
Well, guess what? I'd pay a subscription fee and they wouldn't have to sell on sell.
Yeah.
They just need to ask me and I'll give them money.
But that's the thing. It's probably more profitable for them to not, you know? It's probably more profitable for them to do things the way that they're doing them.
The only reason that it is because asking people for money is hard.
The other thing that we have to remember as well, that these are corporations, and so just simply paying a subscription fee doesn't mean that they wouldn't sell your information to advertisers anyway.
Yeah.
They would think of that as an additional revenue stream rather than a replacement revenue stream.
Yeah, I forget when you have things being shareholder-focused,
all
profits that aren't taken up are wasted.
Yeah. I would love to live in the world where it was still horrifying that someone would share information like that. But,
without asking.
But that's completely normal.
Yep.
Because of EULAs. Anyway, we're not here to talk about capitalism and corporatism and the problems facing the world entering the 21st century.
Solutions will not be found within.
We are here to talk about video games.
Yeah.
And so, as is normally our purview at the start of the show, I would like to introduce myself.
Dun, 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 dun.
I am David Chalante, Slowpoke number 2, and I am sitting with Slowpoke number 1,
John Nicolaitis,
who is my Slowpoke in crime.
Yeah.
Today, we are here to talk about what game, John?
We're here to talk about Soma.
Soma.
Ooh.
So, on the unlikely event that you're joining us for the first time in episode...
It's 8.
Eight. In episode 8.
I got it written down.
Yay!
We're professionals.
Thank goodness for paper. in the unlikely event that you're joining us for the first time, the Slowpokes podcast is where we play games that we really should have gotten around to by now. So they're not super old, they're not super new, they're things that really we don't have any excuses to not have experienced yet.
Usually they're games that everybody talked about for like a while, very excited, and then they disappeared into the ether. And we have them on a list, and we'll keep every so often you look at it and go, ooh.
Every now and then someone will use them as a reference point for other experiences because they stand out, all this kind of stuff. And so we're absent from this conversation. We feel like a lot of people are because video games insist on moving quickly. We, however, like to move slow. So welcome to the Slowpokes. The game we are covering today, as we said, is Soma, which came out in September 2015.
Yep.
So we are a little over a year on from that now. I say a little over a year. More than a year on, definitely.
Yeah, that's how time works, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm failing to count numbers here, so I'm going to take your word.
Well, it's not September 2016, and it's not October 2016, so it's more than a year.
Okay.
It's not a All little
right.
more than
All
a
right.
year.
All right, okay.
That was a misleading thing for me to say.
Why?
Listeners, September 2015, you can count.
Okay. So,
Yeah, so Soma is a really interesting game. I have been interested in trying stuff like this for a while, but I gotta be honest, don't like horror, because it's scary.
This is what I forgot, right? I put this game on the list. I was like, ooh, Soma, ooh, very interesting, ooh. And I thought, oh, let's put this down on the list and we'll play it. And then when I go to play it, this is a little bit of inside knowledge. When I go to play it, I like to find out when the date is. And when I do that, I go to the Wikipedia page, because I'm lazy, and I look up who the developers are. And in this case, I saw that the developers were Frictional Games.
Yep.
And then I realized that they're the people who make all the Amnesia games.
Yep.
And they're the people who make all the horror games. And not only that, but they're the really successful horror people who make the successful horror games.
They're the people who make the successful horror game that isn't Five Nights at Freddy's.
Yes. And then I realized that this is a terrible idea.
Yeah.
Because I am not really the best at the horror game.
See, I'm not either. I'm okay with horror movies because it's so easy for me to switch into trope mode where I'm just like, okay, the jump scare is coming, X is going to happen, Y is going to happen. I'm able to kind of distance myself from it. Games, I think, are a really... This is horror as a genre, I think, is a really great example in the way that games can be more immersive sometimes than movies.
Oh,
because
when
you watch a movie, I'm afraid or concerned that something horrible is going to happen on screen that I will see. But when I play a game, I'm afraid that something horrible is going to happen to myself and to my body.
Yeah, that very act of giving you sort of control over your actions and movements and pacing, it just really brings that immersion right into the experience. Yeah,
and so, like, when I watch a film, my fight or flight reflex doesn't kick in. When I play a game, it kicks in all the time. So even when you're talking about, like, reflex, like, raw reflex is a thing, and that's why jump scares are, I think, often used in them. But, yeah, Soma is definitely, without a doubt, a horror game.
Oh, yeah.
And from the way a lot of people were talking about it when it came out, it's the horror game right now. Like, it's hard to think. Like, people were excited about, like, PT and stuff.
Yeah.
But this is, like...
It's certainly
a very, very, like, exemplary example of horror in games right now.
It's one of those peaks when you look back on the horizons and you think about old, as games have passed, you go, oh, that's there.
It's got a name, like Landmark? Is that the word I'm looking for?
Yeah, Landmark's probably.
It's a bit cliched to say Landmark because it was like to say Gears of War is Landmark, but you know what I mean.
We're talking about horror, though. It's going to be full of cliches. Like, just get started, right? So I think something to talk about is how we're going to deal with spoilers.
Yeah.
Because it's like, it's a very sort of narrative, story-focused experience. And also with horror, all kinds of things can be spoilers.
Yeah, if you go into a horror game, most people who don't want to be spoiled don't want to know what's around the next corner. So even like very basic outlines or very basic like monster descriptions and stuff would affect the experience for a lot of people.
And it's very hard to know where that sits with everyone.
Yeah.
And as much as we'd like to have a completely 100% tailored podcast to each listener, I think that recording, you know, 5 or 6 different podcasts for every person who's listening, you know, that's a bit much, right?
Yeah. As far as spoilers are going to go for today, we're going to go pretty light. But we're going to have like a multi-stage release of spoilers. We'll let you know when each new thing's coming in.
Yeah, we try and do that anyway with all of the podcasts. But by the end, we're going to be full into the fist-swinging spoiler town population spoilers of the end. So, cool.
Yeah, so we'll give you heads up. But as always, be advised that we might slip up. Listen at your own risk. But thanks for joining us. And let's get started.
Yeah, so... neither of us played this game.
Yeah. I had seen part of Chris Straub's Let's Plays of Soma. So, I'd seen like of the very early section of it. So, I was very aware it was a horror game going in, John. But other than that, neither of us had actually touched the game before playing it for this podcast.
Yeah. The only thing I sort of knew was that it's like a creepy underwater game and there's talking robots. That's about it, really.
On the spoiler thing as well, like the underwater thing, theoretically someone might think that was a spoiler.
But like, yeah, I guess, but see, this is the thing, right?
Yeah. This is why we did the warning at the start.
Right. And at that warning, we said, if you want to know nothing, you go away, right? Yeah. I'm going to talk about the fact it's underwater.
Yeah.
Okay. And you can tell that because of every piece of advertising.
Yeah. That's fair, you know. but I'm just saying, it's like, it's dangerous. It's dangerous territory with a game like this. I knew it was horror. I knew it had philosophical themes. And as far as like, expectation of me going in, this is one of the rare situations where my expectations line up pretty much exactly with what I got. Because another one of the conversations that a lot of people were having about the game was that it was great, but there were a little bit too many monsters in it. And that kind of was a barrier for some people. That was a criticism I heard leveled against the game.
That's so true. No, yeah. I had exactly the same experience, although I was actually surprised by what I felt like was a level of good execution in some of the things.
Yeah. We'll talk... like, the levels of monsters... again, we've got to be careful about when we talk about when monsters show up and stuff. So, we'll hold that off for later. But, one of my expectations was that there were going to be too many. And that the game sometimes would become frustrating or exhausting because of that.
It was very... like, lots of people wrote about how frustrating the monsters were. Like, there was a lot. It was a whole movie.
I was talking about Chris Straub before. He's the author of Brood Hollow, and he wrote Candle Cove, if anyone's familiar with that creepypasta. It's one of the big ones.
Right.
He also does, he's done a YouTube series and now does a podcast called Scared Yet, where he talks about horror mechanics and horror tropes, and reviews creepypasta as part of that.
Yeah.
So a lot of, my interest in horror is via that. Like, I don't personally get into it too much, but I'll probably bring him up a couple of times because he was one of the people who talked about the pacing in this. That was our expectations of Soma. As far as keeping stuff spoiler-free, maybe we should talk about how the visual design of the thing was put together. Because it's very, very good in this game.
Yeah. So, like, the first thing, I think, one of the first things you notice is, like, the level of detail and the environments around them, and just gorgeous. Like,
you say gorgeous. I don't know if that's the best word you could choose to describe this environment. Like probably the opposite of gorgeous.
You know, like a spring in your step.
It's just, it's gorgeous, like a freshly dismembered corpse.
Yeah, basically. It's just, most of the game. Yeah,
it is kind of tropey. So, the environments are very industrial. So, like, you know, John's already mentioned that you're underwater. So, you're in this, like, facility that's at the bottom of the ocean, like, deep. And there's all the, you know, all the classic things you'd expect from an alien movie. The pipes and the leaky stuff, the monitors with the scan lines on them, even though this is set in the future, and
all of the modem sounds. Every time you
load up a drive, you hear the hard drive clicking as it whirs up and stuff. And you have hard drives that are the size of, like,
Cassette tapes,
yeah. Like, they're that big and they plug in. They're very plasticky. Yeah, and
cassette tapes are like two DVD cases on top of each other.
Yep.
And DVD cases are round, flat USB sticks.
Yep. Cool. So, a lot of the visuals they're taking a lot of cues from things like Alien. And you were mentioning that Frictional has done the Amnesia series, which is more like your gothic horror aesthetic. Yeah. Like, it's more like the whole...
I think in Amnesia, it's that kind of original Lovecraft kind of thing.
Yeah, that sort of zone.
And there's a bit of steampunk in some of their other games, too.
Whereas this is very much your future sci-fi horror.
Totally.
And it's very, like I said, very heavy, very industrial, very poorly lit, flickering lights, all of that stuff.
They also did make the Penumbra games, of which I have no context for.
Yeah, regardless, the industrial aesthetic in this is it's typical in a couple of ways, but they kind of get away with it because, firstly, they do it really well. Let's not deny that. Like, there's nothing inherently wrong with a trope if it's deployed effectively. The second thing is that, as cliched as that all sounds, this is the first game they've done with this aesthetic, and it's kind of mind-blowing when you look at the way the horror in this is presented, because this is, like, almost my default horror kind of setting, if that makes sense. Like, when someone says horror video game, I think space. I think, you know...
I think that comes from, like,
System Shock and that kind of thing.
Obviously, the things people associate with certain things comes from when they were born and that time and the culture around them. And I think for both of us, Aliens is one of those big kind of keystone for, like, horror in terms of monster horror.
And also, video games do take a lot more cues from something like Alien, because horror in the mid to late 80s, was a lot more action-oriented than horror is now. Like, in that period, you get things like Predator.
Yeah.
You know, and so video games naturally gravitate to something where you can have that action and power challenge as part of a horror experience.
Totally. Some are now trying to have a bit more thriller.
Yeah.
To varying degrees of success.
Yeah, yeah. And we're going to talk about that with Soma as well and where it falls on that scale. But the visuals of it look really, really good in that regard. Something else they do is a very classic Frictional Games technique. They don't just show you the monsters, you know what I mean? It's not Halo where the things pop out and you can see them. They use a lot of techniques to build that fear of the unknown. And so before you see a lot of these robots or a lot of the monsters in the game, they're obscured by shadow or obscured by, you know, you can hear them before you can see them, stuff like that. But one of their big techniques is when you actually directly look at anything, your vision becomes heavily distorted. So you can see, like, the silhouettes or the color. These vague details of this thing, but you can't get a clear image of it. And fuck me, is that effective.
Yeah.
It's so fucking good.
In their other games, I think they sort of use it a bit differently, where it's like your character's going insane with fear.
Yeah.
Whereas it's a little bit of that in this, but there's also, it's just...
They have in-universe explanations for it, but, like, they have a more a digitized distortion of what you're seeing. So, you get, like, static coming through and there's, the like, artifacting on your vision.
Yeah.
And it's so terrifying because, like, you see... Like, before you even know a monster's around, you get these hints. Like, you get that suspense.
Yeah.
And they...
You can hear it.
Yeah.
You can
yeah.
feel it in the vision. You can, you know, you can sense it, and the pace in the music, all of it comes in together.
Yeah, they have really good sound design, and they also use the heartbeat of the character picking up and the breathing and all of this kind of stuff. It sounds so cheap and so easy, but it's so fucking effective, right?
I think the way that I phrase it is, at the very start of the game, in a non sort of horror moment, I dropped a pencil
onto
a desk, and you can hear the wooden pencil clack on the desk and roll all the way across and then fall onto the floor. And it makes every noise you expect a pencil to. And the entire game is like that.
Yeah.
Whether it's machine pipes whirring or gears turning, doors opening, or footsteps of the very character you are walking around the world, just all those sounds come through.
And what's awesome about that isn't just about like world immersion. It's that like when you're trying to hide from a monster, everything you interact with makes sound. You can't open a door silently.
And so you
feel so exposed and so vulnerable all the time. And so the way they use sound design and the way they use like light and darkness and all of this kind of stuff to make you feel unsafe, it's masterwork. And like I understand exactly why so many people point to this as a high point in horror video games.
You can always tell, I think with sound especially, when it's right, it's like on and off.
Yeah.
When the sound is good, you can just hear it click in your mind, and it's something that just really pulls me straight into
it. Yeah. I this is a fairly generic thing to say, and I'm sure that like biologists and psychologists and stuff would be annoyed at me saying this, but I kind of feel like the further away you get from a primary sense, the more kind of like low level its effect of you is, if that makes sense. So like if I'm looking at something, I might consciously recognize that, oh, that's a scary thing to see, or I can't see where this monster is because it's dark. When you get to sound, that's one step away from our primary sense of sight. And so there's something just a lot more subtle. Obviously, I mean, that's almost tautological to say that. But
it
like,
gives room for your mind to interpret things.
The subtler the sense that they're using, I think the more effective it is at emotional responses rather than cognitive ones.
Yep.
And so like their uses of sound in this is just so, so effective at like all the things they're trying to achieve. You know, it's just, it's very, very tense. I was talking before about how you can't interact with anything without it making a noise. This is yet another staple of frictional games where like you don't open a door by pressing X and the door opens. Like most of the time when you interact with something, it's analog, for want of a better term.
Yeah, like- the way I describe it is when you look at something that's movable, you click the mouse to sort of engage it, and then you move to swing or turn or what have
you. Yeah, so the doors don't just have a clean open and a clean closed state, most of them.
Yeah.
You can have them cracked open so you can peek out of them and stuff like that. Chris Raub, again, uses that a lot in his work. The idea of like, if you have an open door or a closed door, there's certainty, but a door that's open just a crack is an upsetting thing because you know there's something beyond it, but what's beyond it is uncertain. And so like these vague states of things, like cupboards that are half open and doors that are half open, are upsetting in that regard because like, you, when you close a door in this way, it doesn't click shut and then lock shut. You know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
When you close a door behind you, it feels so much more easy for a monster to open it because it doesn't feel as solid as other doors in games do.
And, like, the game has different doors.
Yeah.
So, sometimes you'll hit a button and it will click shut behind you, giving you a sense of security.
Yeah.
But then other times you'll close a door and it won't lock in place and you just always feel a bit uncomfortable because it kind of hangs there.
Then they also have the mechanized doors, which are binary, where you click the switch next to the door and it opens and then you click it again and it closes.
Yeah.
And so, like, they use them in different ways to create, like you say, different levels of safety, which is very smart. I'm only kind of realizing that as we're talking about it now.
So they do that with lighting as well.
Yeah.
Right.
The other thing that's, we kind of go back to the sound thing as well, when you need to open a big heavy door and you've got monsters behind you, you start opening it and it creaks because the hinges are rusty, but you still have to push the whole thing yourself, and it's the way that causes tension in the moment is very effective too.
Oh, you have to open a door and sometimes run through it or sometimes hide because like a door has to go through a process of opening and the monster will turn up and be like, who's opening this door then?
Yeah.
Oh, nobody's here.
Not hilarious. Like some giant from Jack and the Beanstalk, though,
oh,
in the most horrifying way possible, because the closer these things get to you, the more
distorted your
distorted
screen,
your screen comes, the more static you hear.
The louder his the character's heartbeat is in your ears.
There's never a point where you're just like, oh, look, it's a monster.
Never.
Well, I say that, but we should actually talk about the gameplay more broadly.
Yeah.
Because there was that expectation I had going into this about the monsters being a bit too much.
Oh, you're going into this now.
Yeah, I think we should. Because Soma is not the only game that's affected by this, but there are plenty of games that I wish were more comfortable with being a, quote, walking simulator.
Yeah.
A game like Firewatch doesn't try too hard to, quote, still be a game. And it's an awesome experience because of it, right? But you get a game like Soma, and I feel like out of maybe just, again, a sort of a tradition thing, like they might not be doing this consciously or deliberately, or a deliberate effort to be afraid of being called a, quote, walking simulator, I feel like they put a lot of video game things in there that actually work against my experience in the game.
Yeah.
So you'll have puzzles. For example, there's a point where you have to repower something, and it's like a pipe dream puzzle.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and it's like, this just feels very gamey right now.
And it's that perfect level of not too hard. Like, you don't really have to think about it. You figure out pretty quick, and then it's just about executing it.
Yeah.
All the puzzles are... I would say that there's a satisfying element to a lot of the puzzles specifically.
Yeah.
But it's the satisfying element of putting square blocks in square holes.
Yeah. Like, the puzzle gameplay is not the biggest thing. Like, there's another point where you have to turn on the turbines, and rather than just clicking the button to turn on the turbines, it's basically a QuickTime event. You have to hit A at the...
Yeah.
Like, a bar starts filling up, and you have to hit it when it's between the green lines and the bar. And it's like, why didn't you just turn it on? Like, why did you make me sit there and play a video game?
And also...
What did that build?
You would think that maybe they would do that when a monster was bearing down on
you.
But they kind of don't do that. Because it would be frustrating if they did. And then you're like, but why are you making me time these buttons?
Exactly. And so you get a couple of things like that. The other thing is that, like I said at the start, I do feel like there are too many monsters in this.
Mm.
The monsters are awesome and fucking scary as all hell
terrifying.
First time you see them.
Yeah.
But the longer you spend around a monster, the more it starts to devolve into like a sort of a stealth puzzle. Like, it's just, okay, now you just have to get around it in this awkward situation where it's kind of blocking a door and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it starts to become a bit more video gamey.
It breaks down into like the mechanics of it.
Yeah, it starts to become a challenge. Like it's trying to say, okay, video gamer, do this challenge bit that's going to be hard like a video game should be.
Yeah.
But I think that comes at the compromise of the actual psychological horror that these monsters inflict on you the first time you see them.
I am always freaked out by those monsters time I see them.
Yeah.
They are unsettling. I don't know what it is. They just creep
me out. They're just really
out.
Fucking well designed. You know, we've talked about exactly why they're terrifying, because they're unknown and you never really get a clear idea of them. But on that point, though, so again, we go back to sort of horror 101, right? What's horrifying is uncertainty. If you see an unknown thing, you are very afraid of it because you don't know what it can do. You don't understand the rules of it. But that sitting on that middle line between certain and uncertain can go both ways, right?
Yeah.
A dragon is not horrifying even though it's supernatural, because we understand what a dragon is.
Yep.
And so the longer an audience spends around a unknown thing, the more likely they're going to categorize it as something that's
knowable,
mundane and knowable and can be overcome.
Yeah.
So you can just bash its head in or shoot it, or it'll have some weakness, or something that is supernatural and beyond material understanding, but still classifiable.
Yeah.
Right? We can still comprehend it. And to its credit, Soma is really, really good at switching the monsters up as they go to prevent you from getting too used to it. But they also use that point just before that to do a stealth puzzle. Oh, I understand the rules of this monster now, so let's do a stealth puzzle. And I feel like they should have just gotten rid of the monster by that point.
No, that's true. And like, I felt like the placement of the monsters in the narrative as a whole. So if you imagine the game as like a movie.
Yeah.
And like where they put the monsters in to build tension, it feels a bit kind of bunched up and not really, like, they don't give you the right number of breaks sometimes.
Yeah,
and
I definitely feel like I could have used a little bit more downtime to reset my baseline experience.
That's a subjective kind of thing. Maybe horror fans want this a little bit more, but I kind of did feel like it was just grouped weirdly.
Yeah.
And it didn't, there wasn't like a confidence in the way that they were paced.
Yeah.
To me,
yeah, I think that in some ways they do pacing well, in some ways they do it poorly.
Yeah.
And I do agree with you. I think that, like, especially you get some of these mini monsters that aren't quite as narratively significant as others.
Yeah.
Like, and I feel like in those sections, you may as well just had nothing.
Yeah. I feel like we can start describing them now.
Yeah. So we are, okay, we actually very much are up to the point where it's monster spoiler time. So if you do want to go into this and not really know what any of the monsters are or how they behave,
you now know.
Thanks for joining us.
Yes.
So you start off the game with the like very basic robot walker type monster. It isn't too like it walks around
it's
and
unsettling.
It hits you. Yeah, it's unsettling because you see it on the rack before it actually wakes up.
Yeah, you've seen yeah. robots like it.
Yeah,
and now you're seeing one that's slightly strange. And I think it's a very easy in.
Yeah, and what's very terrifying about that is the distortion comes in before you even realize that's a monster. So like you're in the room with the deactivated robot and you're getting a lot of the distortion, and you're like, that thing in the corner, I can't go near it. I don't want to be near that thing.
Yep.
And then later you come back and the thing's gone. And you're like, ah. Yep. So you know that this thing is large and hulking, but it's very much a brute kind of monster.
Totally.
But then they start to get really fucking strange.
And I think like the next one is the one that, for me, that was like really unsettling and that really turned things around was the monster that you can't really look at it.
Yeah.
We've got it written down as the don't look monster, which I think is hilarious. But it's like this weird naked man with like a strange glowing head thing.
Yeah, it's like a weird kind of jellyfish, like but lights shooting out of it type thing.
And it's the noise it makes is just, it terrifies me.
Because like the whole thing is like if you're hiding and you're not looking at it, even if it can theoretically see you, it won't know that you're there. But if you look at it, it immediately understands that you've been looking at it. And again, we're going back into horror theory. That's something known as the motif of harmful sensation. The idea that like detecting the world is a dangerous thing. So like reading the Necronomicon is another example of that. And this idea of don't look at the monster, I mean, you see that in Minecraft, for fuck's sake. There's the angels in Doctor Who is another example of that.
The ones who move when you're not
looking
at them.
Sort of the inverse. You have to keep looking at them. But the idea is that even the most basic of passive senses is a dangerous thing. So it's a really well-designed monster. But like I said, you start to understand the rules of it and it stops being scary. And it gets to a point where even like, you know it's out there and one of the other characters, Catherine, says to you, you've got to go back out and do this thing. And Simon, who's your character, goes, I can't. There are monsters out there. And she goes, oh, don't worry. Just don't look at it. And it's like, if we're at the point where I know how to cheat the monster, it should be gone by now. We should have a new monster by this point. Once you understand it, it's no longer horrifying.
Now, for me, though, I find the monsters in this game so unsettling.
Yeah.
That if we weren't recording this podcast, right, I would not have finished this game.
Yeah.
I would not have played this. Like, I would have gotten up to this point. I would have had this monster experience and I would have said, nope, I'm done.
It is really, really upsetting.
Yeah.
And I think we should perhaps
this is where I
have our confession at this point.
We have to come clean. A lot of the talk around the game was that it would be great if the monsters weren't in it.
Yeah.
And what one person did was create a modification for the game where the monsters can't hurt you.
So I knew about this mod before I started playing the game.
I did as well.
And I did not install it.
And neither did I.
I wanted to play the game as it was intended. And I said to myself, look, if it gets to a point where I'm really stuck or something, I'll install it. I looked up this mod after I started playing the game, and I thought the mod, like, it took out like 20% of the monsters, but left everything else in. But it was the wuss mod where monsters do not hurt you. And I was like, fuck, I wish I didn't know that. I wish that I didn't know that it was no harm at all.
Yeah.
But then I installed that mod because I got to the point I was just describing, basically, where they needed me to go through this puzzle after I'd been avoiding this monster, really scared of it. And they were just like, oh, but just don't look at it. But it was still like blocking a doorway and all of this kind of stuff that made that very frustrating. And I was shocked to find that even knowing the monster couldn't hurt me, I was still terrified of it, and I was still, I still had nightmares that night after playing that section. Yes. You know,
so I was playing the game when I first encountered this monster, and as soon as I saw it, I do the classic thing of hits escape, hits exit, turns off computer, right? And then I went downstairs, and I because I knew the mod was there, and I went to my father, and I was talking over to him about how scared I was and how there was this mod there, basically just telling him, give me permission to use this mod, because I do not want to play this game.
Yeah.
And I cannot tell you how scared I was even after installing it, because I'm like, still like, but I might not have installed it properly.
Yeah.
I might still get attacked. And the monsters still come at you.
Mm.
They're not oblivious to your presence. They're basically just do not hurt you.
Yeah.
It does exactly what it says on the box.
Yeah, the monsters still patrol. They still chase after you if they see you. And they're actually, I should let you know as well, there actually are still sections where they can hurt you even with that mod turned on.
It's true.
But yeah, I had the exact same experience that, like, just how well they do the visual and audio design of these monsters, the way they behave, and the confusion that they use in their presentation, it still makes them absolutely fucking terrifying.
Even after I had to try so hard not to look up a guide.
Yeah.
To see when the monsters were coming.
Yeah.
That was how scared I was.
And see, even after I installed the mod, it's so unpleasant to be around the monsters and to see them and to hear their sounds that I still tried to avoid them.
Yeah.
And like, you forget so easily in the moment that they can't hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that we should mention about that mod is that quite completely independently of each other, we installed it at the exact same point in the game.
Yes.
And it was that point where you're navigating that section with the don't look at me monster.
Yep.
There's basically a ship you have to get through. And you get through this sunken ship to where you think you can escape. And then you don't have the thing that you need. And they say, okay, you've got to go back. And when they were like, okay, you have to go back, that was the point where I was just like, no.
Nah.
No.
Then, David, I have to come clean now. I didn't install it then. I installed it as soon as I saw that monster in the ship. I saw that. You walk into the ship, you peek around, it's in a room.
Yeah.
That's when I turned it off, and I didn't turn it on until I installed the mod. I just couldn't do it. I can't. I'm not going to defend. Like, I can't. No, I can't play horror games. And it's just it.
Yeah, it's...
I would just
something
say,
just clicked about that monster that we're going to bring up in the philosophy section. We have a sec, because the game is philosophical. We're going to start talking about the philosophy of the game soon, but something just clicked about that monster that's really important.
Now you listeners and me can be excited about something to come, because I have no idea what David's talking about. But I think the thing we're trying to say is that even though we kind of like put up the imaginary shield, you can't hurt me, no.
Yeah. I mean, theoretically, we know that we can't be hurt, right? Like, I know that my physical flesh form is going to be fine, but it just shows how little the idea that the character can't die matters to how harrowing that experience is.
I always think of it as like, especially games like this, they don't give you tools of combat.
Yeah.
And it's great for horror games.
Yeah.
It's what makes them horrifying. It's why I'm terrified of them and I usually can't play them. Because you have no means to destroy. You can only move. Can only move through.
The best you can do is be kind of halfway safe for just right now.
Yeah.
You can't ever solve, quote unquote, the problem. So we might move on to the characters now. There aren't that many major characters in Soma, but the two big ones are the player character, Simon, and the main non-player character of Catherine. You do have a couple of audio recordings, because it's a horror game, of all of these other characters you get ideas from, but those are the two main ones. And Soma got a lot of praise about the voice work, and I think that praise was well-deserved.
No, I honestly love the banter backwards and forwards. I thought it was really organic.
Catherine, far, far more than Simon, I thought was the more interesting character. Simon's a little bit plain and a little bit lost and a little bit slow.
He does suffer from player character syndrome.
Yeah.
Where I always feel like player characters get a little bit smoothed out so that people can help embody them.
Mm.
And especially when they're supposed to be uncovering something, they're never really like understanding.
Yeah, because for a twist in a movie, it doesn't matter about what the characters know or don't, because they're not you. But when like you have a twist in a game or a reveal in a game, you sometimes kind of sit there and look at the character and just like, can you just pay a little bit more attention, please? You're making me feel dumb.
Can you not see that in the corner there?
It's like, why aren't you asking these very basic questions? Because there's more than one sort of reveal in this game.
Yeah.
And Simon never gets there before any of the other characters do.
All the times when he makes connections... hours later, right? That you made instantly, right? And he's still taking his time.
Yeah.
You're just like, buddy, where have you been?
And sometimes they do have narrative reasons for that. And like, we also have to remember that Simon's probably a lot more stressed out and distracted than we are.
Oh.
But yeah, there were...
Well, I don't know about you, but I was pretty distracted.
Yeah, the character that I think like absolutely killed it though was Catherine. Like the voice actor for her was Nell Mooney, I think, if I'm pronouncing that right. And she did amazing work. None of the actors in this game are super well known. They've sort of done their sort of 50-50 collection of TV voice work and video game voice work. But they all do really good. And Simon takes a little longer to land, but the actor who plays him is Jared Zeus, which just kudos on the name,
that's
buddy.
A fantastic
like, well done.
Name. Like, round of applause.
Yeah, but he does find a character about sort of 10% of the way through the game, and I was much more impressed with his voice work later on.
Yeah, no, that's true.
Just briefly on that, his name Zeus. We forgot to mention the name of the game Soma, and I feel like that is a good point because we're moving into the philosophy of it. The word Soma has a couple of different meanings, but we'll start off with the literal Greek meaning, and I'll hand it over to my Greek co-host.
Yes, so hello, audience. You might not know this, but I'm Greek. I'm not very good with my language of my people. I'm not even good with the other languages that I use, but I was talking to my mother. My family members were really involved in this game.
Yeah, well, I mean, because you were scared and had to run home to your parents.
That's mostly true. So I was talking to my mother about this game, and I was told her what it was called, and she kind of clocks the word and goes, oh, Soma, that's the Greek word for body.
Yeah, and there's a lot of themes in this about... okay, we're very spoiler territory here.
Yeah, so now this is what I call... So we've left the horror people behind, and now if you don't want to know what the game is talking about and what the game is discussing and like the finer details of the story structure and stuff, now is your time to disembark.
Yeah, this is very much full-blown spoilers at this point.
We will not discuss like the game verbatim, but when we talk about the themes, we're going to use examples and they will be plot-related.
Yeah. So, obviously the word Soma, Greek word for body, there's a lot of themes in this about the, you know, what is classified as life versus, you know, mind, body, soul, all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
In biology, the word Soma is used to describe cells that don't regenerate, if I'm using that right. So, neurons are an example of that. They don't replicate. You basically have the same neurons for most of your life. Again, I'm not a neuroscientist. I'm sure there are lots of people who are telling me I'm wrong right now.
Yeah, one or two of them are screaming at them.
The third meaning is the philosophical meaning of the word Soma. And that describes the physical body as distinct from something like the mind or the psyche or the soul. And depending on different philosophical takes, the mind and the psyche and the soul can have varying levels of overlap to one another, but this is a word that's used to describe the physical form. And so, again, philosophical people like Ollie are probably telling me that I've used that wrong as well, but I really like the name of this game because it's multi-layered like that, and it's worth mentioning that that's quite clever.
Yeah.
You know, it also just sounds scary.
Yeah.
Like, it kind of alludes insomnia to me a little bit. There's something phonetic about the word Soma that just doesn't make me feel comfortable.
Also, it's used in the game as well. Like, they do describe, like, when they talk about bodies and the people inside of environments, they do mention the word. I think that's when the game's in its stride.
Yeah.
It is wonderfully layered.
Yeah. And I feel like as great as this game is at being a horrific game, a terrifying experience, as good as it is, that was fucking amazingly good. What I responded to the most in this was the more philosophical side of it. And some of the things we're going to be talking about, they're not unique to this. A lot of sci-fi likes to tackle this stuff. The Swapper is another game that plays around with a lot of the same themes.
Yep.
We've also both seen The Prestige, right?
Yes.
Yeah, there's also overlap in a movie like that.
Yeah, so incidental spoilers for The Prestige.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. Actually, sorry, guys, if you don't want to know how The Prestige ended...
It's aloof now, but moving on.
It'll become very clear why that's related. So, yeah, let's talk about some of these themes, man. Let's talk about some of these themes.
Themes, it's theme times.
Time, it's to, time get- to get our Socrates hats on, or whoever else. Hume, I guess.
You are the learned one.
Who's
not
another
me.
Philosopher? Hayek. He was an economical
Descartes?
Philosopher, though. Doesn't count.
I don't know.
I think Descartes was a poet.
I have no idea, man. You're asking the wrong person.
We're just making it clear how little we know about this. Anyway, philosophy time. So let's start off with the wow, right? Oh. So there's, very briefly, there's a artificial intelligence in the facility, and there's this universal goo that it uses to make repairs on stuff called structure gel. It can be basically digitally programmed to build things and all that kind of stuff. And so the wow goes crazy. We don't have to explain exactly why. But the wow is doing its best to execute its primary directive, which is to protect the staff of the facility.
Yeah.
Now, the wow is not sentient or conscious, but it does redesign itself to go forward and all this kind of thing. So it's a very basic kind of artificial intelligence.
The artificial intelligence in this world are built off people.
Yeah.
And so it's not, it has like the basis there, but it's not a thinking person.
Yeah, and one of the other things the game plays around with is different levels of artificial intelligence. So you have like basic robots that do basic tasks, and you have something like the WoW, and then you have like digital clones of people right?
Yeah.
And that's a brand new thing in the narrative of the game. It's like, it's literally been invented in the last like 4 years by one of the staff at this facility.
Yeah.
And the rest of the world has been destroyed by an apocalyptic asteroid.
Yes.
So this is the only place where humans are still alive, basically.
Totally.
And so the WoW recognizes this and is trying to execute its primary directive of protecting the staff.
Yeah.
And its definition of what maintaining the health of the staff is fucking terrifying. It's so uncomfortable.
So there's a point in the game where one of the characters mentions that the WoW is simplifying its operation.
Yeah.
And the reason why it's doing this is because it thinks mechanically.
Yeah.
And so to it, maintaining the life of the people in the station merely means maintaining their existence.
Yeah, and this is the thing, right? So it maintains their existence, but it's almost like I feel like the WoW is almost experimenting with what that means itself, because you have some like corpses basically that have a machine where the heart would be to keep the heart going, and that's it.
Yeah.
And that's like, so it's a body with a beating heart. Then you'll have like some of these robots where the WoW has taken digital scans of some of the staff and crammed it into this robot, but the robot doesn't have the capacity to fully understand what it is. And so it's a completely mechanical construction with this scan of a human brain. Then you have other characters that are like more conscious and aware, but they're part mechanical, part biological, and all of these different things, like these different interpretations of what life means to this robot. And it's so interesting, right?
Yeah. From like maintaining someone's breathing indefinitely.
Yeah.
These artificial lungs to, I swear I saw one person's chest cavity was just gears
just
and
gears
wide.
And like computer fans and stuff. Yeah.
And you'll just find people littering the halls. Like in some games, like in Doom, for example, you would just find murdered bodies everywhere. In this, they're all being, most of them have been maintained in some form of life.
Yeah, and all of the monsters are results of the WoW attempting this. And so some of them are, like some of them are capable of speech and some of them aren't, and some of them are violent and some of them aren't. And this idea as well is very central to the game because humanity is extinct and the Earth can't support life.
Yeah.
The goal is to launch a satellite with scans of the staff into space where it can be charged by solar radiation and
just fly forever, basically.
And basically just maintain what's left of humanity in this digital utopia. And so you are attempting to maintain humanity in a way.
You're assisting Catherine.
Catherine in doing that. And so there's also a lot of questions about, is what you're doing truly continuing humanity?
Yeah. Or is it just another form of imprisonment?
Yes, exactly. Is it just another way of like locking people down?
Because I think the reason why when you see someone who's been assisted in quotation marks or not, depending on you, how you feel, by WoW to exist, to me as an autonomous person,
yeah,
it feels very confronting to see a person laying there and they've been laying there for years, and their life is being maintained in that way.
Yeah, because there's a point. Most of these corpses that you see stuck in walls and stuff, they're clearly not what a human would define as alive. It's a corpse that's being animated in some way. I doubt that most of them have any level of conscious thought.
I hope.
But you do come across one person who is mostly biological. The WoW has just basically given them a respirator.
Yeah.
And you need to access the power that this respirator is using, and you can get around it if you want, or you can pull the plug and kill this person. And she's very conscious, and she sees you, but she doesn't know how much time has passed. You ask her at one point if she's okay, and she says she doesn't know. And it was in that moment where I'm deciding, okay, do I rip this out of the wall to continue my journey, or do I leave her in this state, that I realized, because this was a moment of realization in myself when I played this, how much I define freedom of movement, freedom, as you say, like autonomy in our physical form, as not as life, but as freedom more fully, you know?
Yeah.
Because it's also worth mentioning, Simon is a part biological, part mechanical construction that has woken up in this facility after having his brain scan put in a robot. It takes him a long time to figure that out, which is very frustrating.
It's something that you almost figure out instantly.
But I look at this person who's mostly biological and still has a cognitive function, and I look at myself, I'm capable of leaving. And so a part of my mentality there was, okay, I'm going to, you know, put her out of her misery. I'm going to, because she doesn't seem happy or safe or comfortable.
She asks you if you see anyone else to tell them where she is so they can come get her.
Yeah.
And even when you also find crippled machines as well.
Yeah, and they think they're human.
And they always ask, if they're disabled in some way, they always ask for help.
Yeah.
Tell someone to come and get me.
Yeah, help me out here. There's almost no one who's like, please put me out of my misery and all of that kind of stuff. So it plays around with these ideas of, like you say, autonomy in life, but also about freedom and stuff. And so you have this satellite that they call the Ark, full of digital people who are confined to that physical constraint, but are under the illusion of freedom. I say illusion as perhaps a too pejorative, but they live in a digital world and a synthetic world, but they can move wherever they want in that synthetic world.
And they're also aware that they are in a synthetic world?
Yeah, I believe that they are. That's never 100% clear.
It is 100% clear, because when they enter the world, they literally fill out a questionnaire asking if they want to die.
Yeah, so that was another really awesome thing this game does, because the construction of the Ark is a response to the apocalypse that kills all humanity. That's not the purpose of the facility. But they're like, okay, there's only like 120 people left. Do we do this?
Yeah, and it was kind of like an ancillary project that someone was working on, because it's a scientific facility.
Yeah.
And then they made the leap and realized that they could construct this thing.
Yeah.
And so that's why they then launch full into it.
Because all of their other research is about, you know, like, climate change is kind of pointless at that.
When the atmosphere is all black and the world's on fire, I don't think we have to worry about climate change.
Yeah. So at certain points in the game, you as Simon come across these questionnaires that the staff were building to help acclimatize people to living in this digital world. And you answer them in a totally different context.
Yeah.
You talk about like bookending and juxtaposition. One of the most brilliant things in this is you do the same questionnaire at two different points in the game. And we'll bring that back up when we get to it.
Yeah.
Because the other thing that this game plays around with is the idea of, I guess, identity. The idea of what it means to be yourself and to be an individual. Because these scans are exactly that. They're scans.
Yeah.
So Simon gets a scan.
He actually gets one in 2014.
2014, and the game is set in like 2103 or something. Yeah. And his scan winds up on this station. So this version of Simon that you are is built from this scan of him, and he died 80-something years ago.
Yeah, he died months after the scan was done in 2014.
And so you already know from pretty early on in the game that you're a copy of the original biological Simon.
Yep.
And the game does a lot of stuff that's very interesting with that. So there's a point where you're part of this robot body, and it's not going to survive the new depths you have to go to. So you have to construct a new body and scan yourself into it. When Simon sits down to do that scan, he thinks he's going to be moved into that new body. But what, of course, happens to anybody who kind of understands how computers work is that his mind is copied into that, but the original body is then it passes out as part of the scan. Yeah.
From the player's perspective, from you as the player, you sit in this machine to scan you. It scans you. You wake up in the new body, but then you hear your own voice.
Just before the previous body passes out.
Saying, did it work?
And so you have this moment where Simon reacts really badly to that. He's like, this is fucked up. What's going on? And once again, we're coming to one of these points where Simon is very slow at understanding this, because I knew as a player straight away that it was going to be a copy. I wasn't surprised by that. But he gets very, very angry. And Catherine, who's with you as well, she's like, well, what do you want to do with the old body? And it's like, well, does he have to wake up? You know, are we just going to leave him here? That's fucked up.
Catherine was planning on just putting him to sleep forever.
And I think for a few days is what she said.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. So just for a few days and then he'll wake up.
Yeah. And so you have this point where you can choose, do you terminate this unconscious version of yourself or do you leave it? What did you do?
So before I reveal what kind of monster I am, I want to say that the game always kind of just sets these things up.
Yeah.
And it kind of doesn't, like, it does it all the time.
Yeah.
It sets up these little decisions that you can make and it goes, oh, look, the world has created this experiment. How are you going to react to it?
Yeah.
What does that make you feel?
Mm.
It doesn't pass too much judgment. It's not really saying what things are and what things aren't. It's really-
Catherine is the only other voice in the game most of the time, and she is like sociopathically detached from basically everything that happens. So you don't get a lot of judgment from her at all.
Totally. But I erased his that copy.
So you terminated that version of Simon.
I terminated that version of Simon.
I did as well. My mentality was that he can't leave.
Yeah.
He's what's worse, dying peacefully in his sleep or getting torn apart by these monsters.
Or being trapped in a dilapidated
facility for the next 100 years.
Yeah. Until it implodes.
Yeah.
And then your battery runs out.
Part of me was like, he should have the right to make this decision. But at the same time, I was like, that burden, the burden of that impossible decision is almost unfair.
So it kind of depends. Like, one could say that in that split moment, in that immediate moment, the conscious Simon, the player character, has
enough proximity.
Is almost the Simon in the chair.
Yeah.
Right? And that's why, that's one of the reasons why I feel like he reacts so badly.
Yeah.
Is because he's like, I could have been that Simon.
Yeah.
I could have been in the chair. I could have been stuck there forever.
Yeah.
And how would I feel about that?
Yeah, exactly.
And I just put myself in his place and I just probably wouldn't want to wake up from that because it probably would have driven me mad. I just thought of myself personally and I was like, that would probably drive me mad.
The thing that really tipped me over the edge was that Catherine was the thing that made me feel the safest in that facility, and she wouldn't have been there when he woke up.
Oh, that's so true. Yeah. No,
he would have just woken up and been alone.
And as you mentioned that now, that is also a good point. Like, the idea of him waking up without Catherine as well, and then with the suit gone and just that kind of...
Yeah, him having to piece that together, and it's...
terrifying.
Yeah.
And maybe that's like a judgment on like how we feel about we would react in that situation, but that's just how...
Yeah.
That's just what I would say.
It is, because they talk about that idea that where he's like, I could have been that Simon. He uses the example, it's like it's a coin flip.
Yeah.
You know, I could have just as easily been him as been me. I think that that's an interesting idea, but I also feel like that doesn't actually rectify it, because he is like... My feeling about that, it's not that he could have been that Simon, it's that both experiences exist, right? And so one Simon is going to wake up in the chair, but it's not a question about which one will get which job. It's that there will always be one in the chair and always be one who walks away. And so when this moment comes and he's all like, oh, that could have been me, it's like, well, it couldn't have been you, but it was you. Like,
yeah, yes.
And even though I truly and fully believe that like a copy of a person in that way is its own entity, and even though they share a past, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're beholden to the second or the quote original version of themselves, that they are at that point two autonomous things the second that their experiences diverge.
Yeah.
It's not a question of let's roll the dice and see where I land. It is... you are going to wake up in this chair and you are going to walk away.
But here's the question,
yeah,
right? And this is what comes into when people talk about like the Star Trek paradox, the transporter paradox.
Yeah.
Do you die when you go through a transporter?
Yeah.
Or the prestige, which like we mentioned before.
It's so
like,
this is the question of continuity,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. Where's the continuity?
Yeah.
Because the game inadvertently presents a continuity. Your Simon, in quotations, travels from the seat to the new body.
Yeah.
Right? And that is a continuity.
Mm.
It's like, but what happens if your continuity wasn't that?
Yeah.
And you were the Simon that then gets erased.
Exactly. And so there's this, they play with this idea of continuity as well, because as the staff are getting scanned to enter the Ark, a proportion of them kill themselves immediately after the scan is performed.
Yep.
Because they want a single continuity to occur, because philosophically they believe that that's what makes their identity travel on. Like,
yeah.
They don't want to exist with this sense of being copied. And continuity is played around a lot as well, because Catherine is in... She's an AI in your Omnitool.
Her robot body gets damaged very early in the game, and you basically carry her around in a remote control, and only when you plug her into things...
Yeah, when she's not plugged into something, she has no experience of existence. Yeah. And so she has these large gaps of experience.
She phrases them as being omitted.
Yeah, she says time's not missing, but it's omitted. But you can still see this idea of a continuity for her, that yeah. like she has an experience of this world. And so you think about these gaps, and it's like what continuity means for experience, because there are some people who argue that when you sleep, you turn your brain off and then you wake up the next morning. Are you the same person, or have you died and then rebooted, but just have the memories of before, you know? And so, like, you have this question about Catherine. Is she the same Catherine through all of this? And she argues, she feels very strongly that she is, right? She has a much better idea about what's going on than Simon, because she's the one who designed the Ark.
Yeah.
But you get to the big final moment in the game, and the whole point of the game is to find the Ark, copy yourselves into it, and then launch it into space, because the facility has fallen apart before that was actually able to happen.
Basically, one of the main selling points of the facility is it has a giant rail gun.
Yeah, right? a space gun for launching satellites.
Yeah, and because it's like a giant big electromagnet thing, it can easily launch satellites into space.
Yeah.
So that's why it's there at the bottom of this trench in this facility. And so you're working your way there, and Simon, the perpetual moron that he is, is asking Catherine how they're going to be copied, how they're going to get into the Ark.
Yeah.
And she says, oh, don't worry about it. When you have to launch it, it's very complicated. You just have to sit in the pilot chair, which is the special chair
that they use to scan people's brains.
Yeah. And then, you know, when we launch it, that will also start the copying process.
Yeah. So, Simon sits in the chair, hits the launch button, sees the copying bar fill up. It completes. The thing launches. But the player is still in the chair.
Yeah.
And so that's this big moment at the end. And Simon fucking loses it at Catherine. Yeah. He's like, you fucking lied to me. I'm going to die. What the fuck is wrong with you? And Catherine at this point is...
Catherine gets angry at Simon.
Yeah. And I think that it's fair, because she says, like, I didn't lie to you. You've been here this whole time. How do you not understand how this works? And Catherine, of course, is coming to terms with the fact that she's also going to die. That this Catherine is going to die.
Or at the very least,
she has to put up with Simon blaming her for that. And I felt so sorry for Catherine, but so fucking pissed at Simon. I get it. You're going to die. It really sucks. But dude, you just saved humanity. You just saved the last of humanity.
It's true.
And you got to go along for the ride.
But you got to remember, though, that Simon's experience is 2014 in Toronto.
Yeah.
Right? He's Canadian for some beautiful reason.
Yeah.
Waking up in an underwater hell facility, escaping from monsters, trying to launch an Ark into space, coming to terms with being a robot.
Yeah.
Right? And then to not...
Yeah, after all of that.
That's a big day.
Yeah, and so I get that, and like he reacts really poorly and he screams at Catherine, and then everything goes dark and he's like, no, don't leave me, because she, like, all the power shuts down and she basically dies at that point.
Ooh. Yeah.
And, you know, he's like, don't leave me. Then the credits roll and then Simon wakes up in the Ark, and that was brilliant.
And like
it
you
was
said-
so, so good.
And like you said before about filling the survey out at two points- That's when you fill the survey out again.
So the first time you fill out the survey, it's as Robot Simon in
In the facility.
In the facility. And it's about, like, do you feel disconnected from yourself? Would you rather end the simulation and accept death? All this kind of stuff. And, like, you know, you're answering questions about, like, you know, I feel muted. I feel like a better version of myself.
Yeah.
And when I answered that survey the first time, I answered it really honestly. And when I answered that survey the second time, I answered it really honestly and totally, totally different results. Because when you're in the arc and you're seeing trees for the first time you've seen in the game, and you're looking down and, like, you know, Simon gets injured at one point potentially and loses his arm, but in the arc he's got both of his arms back, and all, and you feel just so, like, free and safe and warm because there's a sun, and, like, it just shows how much that, like, the subjectivity of where you are affects everything.
I'm gonna stop you there. So you answered differently.
I answered differently.
Yeah. I answered exactly the same both times.
Really?
Yeah. Just because Simon's in an underwater hell prison doesn't mean that, from my experience,
some of the questions I answered differently, some of them I answered the same. So there was one about, like, do you think this life has meaning, right? And when I was underwater Simon, I was like, just as much as my own life. When I was digital Simon, I said, I think I can find a new kind of meaning in this life. And so, like, there's slight differences.
Oh, okay.
But then there was the question about, like, do you feel, you know, how do you feel about your new form? And as robot Simon, I was like, I feel detached. Like, there's a separation between my mind and body. But when I was digital Simon, I said, I feel like a better version of myself. Because I did. When I was robot Simon, I felt uncomfortable with my physical form. But when I was digital Simon and I had that simulation of flesh, I felt more comfortable with it.
See, I'm not so attached to the flesh. Like, as Robot Simon, I was really confronted by how comfortable the idea of my existence being data was.
Yeah.
But the idea of myself as being separate from my body, while still related to it, but in a more functional way, while still understanding, like, the interconnectivity between our bodies and, like, how sensory feedback and chemicals and how that can stimulate us and
yeah,
who we are.
Yeah, that's a big thing for me.
Yeah, I'm well aware of that, but for me, it wasn't so much of a swing, is all I'm trying to say.
See, I would be perfectly comfortable. Let's pretend that I woke up after, you know, let's say I woke up tomorrow and I look down and my left arm is a robotic arm. And, you know, my family tell me that you were actually in a crash last night. There's been some amnesia. You lost your arm, but luckily we were able to give you this robot arm. I would come to terms with that relatively quickly, because for me, an arm is, like you say, it's just a mechanical prop that holds me. When you talk about the mind, and especially speaking from my own experience as someone who has depression and all of that kind of thing, neurochemistry is a really big part for me about what makes up my cognitive experience. And so the idea of me being data as opposed to having the, quote, hardware of a physical human brain, I would be afraid that my perceptions and stuff would be changed. When I was completely digital in the arc, I felt like because that had been done by people, and it was done with an attempt to emulate the operation of a human mind, there was something safer about that than the Frankensteinian experiment of waking up in a corpse, a mechanically animated corpse. So that was part of it as well. Like, there is neurochemistry and things involved. But the second if I woke up and I was like, okay, this is a simulation, your brain's been copied, organic David still exists, you're digital David, I would go, I'm a different David now. You know, I share a backstory to a certain point, but I'm a completely diverged thing, not just because of my subjective experience, but because the very nature of being digital is going to affect the way my basic thoughts function, even if I didn't even know that I was digital.
I'm not disagreeing with you there.
Yeah.
Like, I fully understand that. And I want to just say right now, because you did mention, like, an accident, like, we are fully abled. Is that the right way to say that?
Yeah.
I don't actually know. But, like, we're people who don't suffer from that.
From physical disabilities, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know how to say that. I'm just trying to be nice.
The acceptable term is disabilities.
Thank you.
Deliberately attempting to avoid the word disability is often considered more offensive than just saying it.
Okay. Well, I'm not a person with physical disabilities. I also feel like I'm not a person with cognitive disabilities either, right? And that puts me at an interesting point genetic lottery privilege, right?
Like, yeah, I know what you mean by that.
But so it's like, it's very interesting that you raised that, and I'm very grateful, because I always forget that, right? The idea that the limits of my own chemical mind,
yeah,
or potentially the limits of my own Frankenstein cyborg body.
Yeah.
Right. And like when you first go into that Frankenstein body.
Yeah.
The copy of Simon's mind is almost, I would argue, is almost like a perfect copy.
Yeah.
Because it starts to do psychological things to help maintain his sanity.
Yeah.
Like by making him feel like himself.
He has elements of denial about the experience that he's in.
Yeah.
And so let's, like, for the sake of argument, say that the digital clone is a perfect replica as far as the way that it functions. Let's presume that. Even then, the subjective experience of being in a comfortable environment versus a very, very uncomfortable environment is going to affect the way I feel about myself and my own body. And I think that's why some of my questions changed.
Yeah. Again, like, I'm not saying that mine changed. Like, mine changed a little, but they weren't huge swings.
No, some of them were the exact opposite of what I said previously. And it just kind of shows that, for me, it revealed, like, again, how much my physical autonomy matters to my positive experience of space, how much comfort affects my philosophical understanding of my own self and my satisfaction with my own self and my own identity.
And like,
I'm a digital Simon, but I'm doing okay. You know, there's nothing I can complain about, so things are great. But when things are bad, how much I judge myself and my own body because of that, it's kind of interesting.
See, that comes back into some of the characters you encounter in the states they're in, right? So you come across Amy, who is the person being kept alive with the lungs.
Oh, yeah. Right?
That's the one that you can optionally pull out the plugs to kill, which I did kind of by accident, but also
I did that very deliberately. I pulled out one, saw that she was suffering, and I turned to the computer and realized I don't have to pull out this second plug. I could leave her alive.
Yeah.
But I pulled out the second plug.
Yeah. Because I felt like she was trapped.
Yeah.
She would live forever trapped. And to me, that is suffering.
Yeah. And then we come to that question about the Ark. Is that just another prison?
Yeah. Now, my argument for, like, the difference between the two is that literally in the Ark, you wake up in a utopian world.
Yeah.
There is, even if it's perceived autonomy, there's certainly what I could argue as stimulus from other entities.
Yeah,
right?
There's other humans there. They also talk about the potentiality of other
constructing AIs.
AIs that would be simple but still allow social interaction.
Yeah, and would even potentially get greater as time goes on
because
you're immortal inside of a computer.
Yeah, and so the other question about the Ark as well is that that's a prison that you chose, not a prison that you were captured into, apparently for your own good. All of the people that were scanned into the Ark did so willingly. It was an opt-in process. Do you want to potentially have a digital copy of you continue on?
Yeah, it is not forced at all. They make a point about that.
If anything, just getting the Ark project going was what had resistance, you know? Like, it's, and everyone involved was perfectly happy to be involved. So I think that, like, personally, the question of whether the Ark is a prison for me is no. But you can tell the game is asking the question because of how they frame that final shot of the satellite. You know, you start off in the utopia on the inside of it, and then they pan backwards out of the satellite. And so it kind of is that juxtaposition of you feel like you're in this warm, summery, beautiful forest, but really you're in a metal can floating in the cold dead of space.
And so my answer to that would be, have you looked at your own body lately in the mirror?
Yeah.
And what kind of prison that? Just because I can move around, in quotation marks, this planet.
Yeah.
Isn't this planet just flying through outer space?
Yeah, exactly. It's just that's a really good point, actually.
You know, like, sure, the nature of my prison may have changed, but has it? I don't know. To me, it just seemed like... I would hope that if continuity of thought or consciousness was a thing, I would love to wake up as Simon inside of the Ark.
Yeah. What was the only upsetting thing about that is you have the realization that Simon inside the Ark has no idea what that means. Like, he honestly thinks he was moved into it. And maybe Catherine would explain it.
I'm sure it'll come
up. The way I feel about Simon and the way he feels about, like, you know, the other Simons that he's seen, like the Simon from way back in the past, the way he talks about the copy of the Simon in the chair that first time. I feel like what's really upsetting for me about that is he doesn't understand the sacrifice of his other self, you know? One of the things that I actually found a little bit frustrating about going into that chair is the whole time she's like, okay, what we're going to do is we'll the button to launch it, that'll start the copy, then you'll go into it. My first thought was like, can't you just copy me now?
Yeah.
Right? And so, because for me as a person, I understood that the version of me was going to get left behind.
Yeah.
And not only would I have been more comfortable with that because it was far more likely my copy would actually continue on in the arc rather than waiting down to the last nanosecond, we'd also be able to come to terms with the fact that when I press that button, I wasn't going to magically leave that situation.
But David, we're not talking about you sitting in that chair.
We're talking about Simon. Yeah.
And how does Simon react when he finds out? He flips his shit.
Yeah.
Now, can you imagine what would happen if Simon was not given the choice?
Yeah, that's a good point.
And in this case, we could probably say maybe Catherine was being manipulative by not reminding Simon.
It's possible. I don't think she was. I think that her motivation was probably just to get the most up-to-date scan possible.
I have a feeling that she kind of knows how Simon would react because honestly, like, why wouldn't you just have it done before? Terms of, like, the game narrative
obviously,
experience.
The game narrative requires it. I think that that's why the main reason why it folded out the way it did.
Oh, so yeah. Okay. So, yeah. It kind
of is. I think that the way Catherine's characterized to me is, like I said, she's cold. I say that she's cold. I actually find her quite affable. I would really love to hang out with Catherine. But
when you say cold, I think you're referring to, she's a level of realism.
Yeah, she's very, very...
not realism.
Rationalism. Yes. Yeah, she's very, very rational in the way that she depicts stuff. And it's clear that she has come to terms with the fact that she's not going on the ship and all of that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I, in that situation as well, would have asked Catherine at some point, should we rig up a way for me to die as soon as that scan is completed?
You know what I thought pretty much right after the game ended? I was like, well, why are you yelling so much? Like,
yeah.
Just get Catherine, go back to that simulation, and the two of you can spend about 10 years in there the other one.
But it wouldn't. Yet another copy of Catherine and Simon would spend time in that simulation. So, it would never solve the problem of one of them being left.
So this is something I would say, is Catherine can be plugged into things.
Yeah.
And then she can move into them. And, like, her experience changes that way?
See, I think that she's confined to the Cortex chip, and she can copy the data from the Cortex chip into other scenarios, but when she's plugged in and out, it's like us going to sleep. The point I was going to make about that monster before as well, the Don't Look at Me monster, it seems to teleport, yeah?
Yeah.
But it doesn't actually teleport. It releases electromagnetism that confuses Simon's robot body. So, that's another little moment of the question of continuity. That, right. Like, this monster looks like it's teleporting, but really Simon is just missing chunks of time where the monster probably just walked.
Yeah.
And I thought that was very clever as well. If I was Simon in that chair, I would have had a long think about what are the odds of me being able to reach the surface? Because, you know, I could maybe climb up the barrel of that gun.
Oh, that's exactly what that was the second thing I thought about. Yeah. I was like, well, I am a robot who doesn't need to eat or sleep.
Yeah.
Might as well
maybe
give it a
I
shot.
Can climb the barrel of the gun. And if I had said that, like, okay, that's probably not going to work because it's this long. And I, you know, Simon in the world would know if he felt tired or exhausted or hungry and things like that. Whereas I, as the player, don't really know what his physiological experience is.
Yeah.
The reason I was like, should we figure out a way for me to die in this chair? Is not because, yes, the blissful ignorance, let's continue the continuity. It's just, again, it's about euthanasia. It's like, I would rather die peacefully in this chair of my own terms than drown. Or yep. Be killed by a monster, or be torn apart by any of these robot fish.
Or spend years waiting for your robotic body to fall apart.
Yeah, exactly. And like you say, it comes back to that idea of cognitive input and stimulus in the arc. That's what life is to me. Life and the thing that grants me a positive experience is being able to do things like play a video game and absorb art and have conversations with other people.
Like
merely having my heart continue to beat doesn't really do that much for me.
Yeah. No, I kind of have to agree with you there. I hate to just... Sometimes I just... This happens to me all the time. Sometimes someone says something and I just go, yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Like, you're right. And like, finally, it's... Yeah, there's no way for Simon to turn himself off, and that's kind of a tragedy.
Yeah.
But that was Soma.
That was Soma. Underscoring it, pretty well fucking good at everything it does.
Yeah. It's a scary game, but it's beautifully executed. So it's almost worth having a look to see just how they put it together.
Yeah, absolute thumbs up. It did well, I guess.
Success.
So, yeah, that was Soma. If you like what we do here, you can listen to our other episodes. iTunes is probably the best place to find us. You can search for us.
Although any podcast app should work now.
Yes, because we are...
on iTunes.
We are in databases and stuff, like real people who do this as a job.
We sent the emails, we asked the questions, we demanded results, and then they were achieved.
And all of that is a metaphor for me filling out an online form.
Yes.
So, yes, we are on iTunes, which is a great place to find us. Give us a rating if you could. It always helps to get a positive rating on iTunes.
We've also got our website, slowpokespodcast.com.
Yep.
Which has everything
else on it. Yeah, which is really great. If you do want to get in touch with us, I am mainly running our Twitter account. That's at slowpokescast. And John
is kind of doing the Facebook page, which is facebook.com/slowpokespodcast. Although if you just type slowpokespodcast into the Facebook.
Yeah. Or Google. That's really satisfying. If you Google Slowpokes Podcast, we're like the top 6 results now.
It used to be a couple of other sort of episodes of other podcasts, but we come up pretty quickly when you put the word Slowpokes Podcast in there.
Yeah, which is nice. It's nice to come to the top of a Google result about
something.
This
is the part of the podcast where we pat ourselves on the back. Good SEO.
Well, we are ultimately very... What's cool about doing this is that it's amazing how professional it looks once you actually step back from it, because we've been building it from the start, right? Yeah, yeah. And so we're involved in every step of the process with the anxiety of, it's like, who's going to want to listen to this? And even though we're nowhere near any kind of commercial success at all, it is nice to see something we've made in a public place. Yeah. You know, that's a cool thing. Yeah. So I think it's important that we take a step back and appreciate that.
It's always great to point to something and go, hey, I made that. That's nice, isn't it?
And not just that, like just art in general. Like I know a bunch of people who are in theater and stuff and their parents are all like, oh, acting, you'll never make it in acting, because they think making it in acting is being in a movie.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have to be that. Like it's completely 100% successful to make a 2-person show that is real and has been written and all that kind of stuff. I think that it's cool that you and I are capable of being satisfied with what we've got so far. Like, we don't need all of that. Like, yeah, we've been featured in fucking Kotaku or whatever. I don't know where people feature podcasts.
I have no idea.
We don't need like that level to actually feel like this is a rewarding experience.
It's already actually, I honestly, it's been one of the most rewarding things I've worked on. And I think I want to say that now. And if anyone's listening to this and you're enjoying it, that's fantastic.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
I guess is really what we're trying to say. Thank you for listening and thank you for supporting our work and sharing our work, because we actually find it super amazing that we're able to have fun doing this.
And when at the end we say like, oh, here's our contact stuff, I'm totally interested. Yeah, there's a reason why we set it up.
I would be super stoked if I could have a conversation with someone about, you know, why everything I said about the philosophy in this was really stupid.
Yeah.
Because I want to grow.
There's nothing better than being told that I'm wrong and then someone clearly and precisely saying like the right thing.
Yeah.
And I get to learn and grow as a person.
Yeah, that's very cool.
Never an experience I want to turn down. If there's anything that comes up in the podcast, I know sometimes we try and mention things and we try and not speak for other people. If there's ever a moment you feel like we might be doing something wrong or you have any opinions, let us know.
Yeah. Or even if we just pronounce someone's name wrong. Cool, honest to God, it never hurts to just have that little bit more information.
Totally.
Or you just want to tell us that we did a good job.
That's always
good. I like that one too.
Yeah. So the next game on our list is Doom.
Doom.
Doom. Doom. I want to sing the Halo theme again. Doesn't make any sense, but that'll be fun.
Doom is obviously like the inverse of Soma in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
So that, I imagine, is going to be very high octane, very pew, pew, pew.
Pew, pew.
But again, another game where we've heard really amazing things. That's a relatively young one as well.
Yeah,
right? That's sort
of one
like
of our younger
March
games.
2016 or something?
Yeah, I think so. I can't remember.
Yeah, it's going to be one of the newest ones we've done. But again, massive positive reception, and so looking forward to doing an episode about that.
Totally. All right, well, that's been us. I've been John.
I've been David.
Have a good one.
Bye bye from the Slowpokes.
Yes.